Right, what's happening, everyone? This is Con. I'm joined by Cooper, fresh off his conversations with some of the leading men in golf technology. At the moment, from the 1-0 conference last week in the Aviva Stadium. Looking forward to getting stuck into some of that stuff. Joe was supposed to be joining us, but he's allegedly being held up by some Vietnamese authorities on his way to Ho Chi Minh. We're in a bit of a lull of the season at the moment. We're kind of between the Players' Championship and the Masters. But Peter Malnati won last week at the Valspar against a pretty average field and what has become a pretty common occurrence so far this season on the main tours. But we are only a couple of weeks away from the Masters, so we shouldn't complain too much. But yeah, Roy Cooper, so you've just played a big role at a recent sports tech conference in the Aviva Stadium in Dublin in the last week. Looking from the outside, I saw some of the speakers you had involved were genuinely at the very top of golf tech. The likes of Andrew McCauley, who is not a household name, but he's Chief Technology Officer at Tomorrow Sports, which is Tiger and Rory's company. You had, was it the CTO, the Ryder Cup? Also co-founder of TrackMan was there, as well as some others from the world of sport, like Eddie Hearn and Louis Saha. So dying to hear what these people had to say. Give us some of the key stuff from that whole conference, and then maybe we can dig into some of the specifics.
Yeah, it was in terms of, like, as you said, household names. A lot of them, you wouldn't even really have heard of them before unless you're in that specific industry, like whether it is golf or even on the football side. Like, we had the kind of chief marketing officer from Boca Juniors Football Club and the head of digital football at AS Roma. Like, you're never going to see these guys on Sky News talking about what they do. But when you go to conferences, these are the lads who are leading, I guess, the digital back end of some of the biggest clubs, leagues, tours in the world. So it was, yeah, really, really successful week. I think from the golf side anyway, that was, we managed to get Andrew McCauley, the CTO of Tomorrow Sports, over around, or managed to convince him to come around December, January. I think it was maybe before Christmas. And then we said, right, we have this guy who's literally building something very unique, very cool, very different in golf. Let's try and get another golf panel and obviously shoot for the stars. And a lot of them ended up coming good. So it was brilliant in terms of, like, I think the Car Golf sponsored the entire golf aspect of the conference, which included a round in Port Marnock on the Tuesday for a bit of a golf outing for some of the speakers and sponsors. And yeah, I was playing that day with Alex Saul from Car Golf, and Marty Carr was playing with us as well. And Frederick Tuxen, the CTO and co-founder of TrackMan. And yeah, I think I hit a few, I'd say two or three drives, like, good digs. And then he's straight over, he's like, what's your swing speed? Like, I said, straight into the the TrackMan data.
And you're like, oh, I don't know, I must you must give me a free TrackMan so I can find out.
Yeah, just give me one of those TrackMan 4s there. I don't know how much they are, but they're not cheap. But no, like, it was, I think in terms of the type of people that were there, again, they're not household names, but like, when you look at TrackMan now, I don't know how many TrackMans they actually have globally, but if you look at the map for the locator, like, there's thousands of them all around the world. Like, and this guy started his career in the Danish military building missile seeking radars for the for the Danish military. And then his co-founder came up and basically said, can you do the same thing for golf balls? Like, that was how TrackMan was founded.
Really? So, I heard that Bushnell, the lasers were originally built for snipers. So that's
mad. Yeah, everything, all good technology comes from space exploration or war. So yeah, it's probably is bang on. But yeah, like when you think of TrackMan as a really good example, like there's a few players in the space now, like Foresight and Full Swing in the US, but like to have him there was unbelievable. And in terms of kind of what we're building in Drogheda now and the indoor golf side, it's like you're never gonna chat to the guys who work in UK and Ireland and Europe, but like you're not gonna get the CTO. So I guess from that side, 1-0 is really, really cool. But again, you don't just get them by asking. You have to build a proper bit of content for them to come over. And the panel Friedrich was on with Dan Zelazinski from 21st Group. I don't know if you ever heard of Justin Ray, the stats guy on.
Oh yeah, Twitter. Yeah.
So he works for Dan on the data side. So
Dan
Zelazinski is the CCO of 21st Group. They used to be called the 15th Club, and they basically did the data analytics for the European Ryder Cup team in France and in Whistling Straits, like what Eduardo Manolari did for Luke Donald in Rome. So like he's under, again, someone you probably never heard of, a company you mightn't have heard of, but like influential in Europe winning the Ryder Cup in France. So, and then the final guy on that panel moderated by Cargolf was Michael Cole, the CTO of the DP World Tour and Ryder Cup and Challenge Tour and fucking everything under the European Tour group. And like when you have the three guys there talking, their talk was basically about data and golf and around kind of performance and participation. So like you've three guys there who could definitely keynote themselves. Like you could spend an hour talking to them about things they're building. And like obviously we didn't plan on having an entire golf stage, but next year we'll definitely have an entire day dedicated to golf, because the things that are happening on the tech side in particular, which is, I guess, 1-0 is just sports, business and technology, but the things happening in golf at the moment revolving around tech are pretty colossal. Like I sat down with Andrew McCauley then as well as the keynote, and like one of the stats he was pulling up in terms of why I guess Tomorrow Sports and TGL is particularly I guess it's important now, because he actually spent 10 years as the CTO and CIO of Topgolf. So he basically led them through their massive expansion, the acquisition by Callaway, and then joined Tiger and Rory at Tomorrow Sports. But his whole thing is non-grass golf. It's this term that's becoming extremely normal in the US, but it's not really in Europe yet. I'm not even sure what it is in Oz. It's probably just the US and maybe some of the Asian markets as well. And the Scandies are fairly used to it too now as a result of TrackMan. But he was showing us stats in terms of, I think there's 26 million members of golf clubs in the US, and there was 30 million unique visitors to Topgolf alone in 2023. So there's more people actually playing golf on fake grass than real grass.
That's mad. And it's so true. Like anecdotally, there's a really good driving range near me, Sandringham, Sandy Golf House in Melbourne. It's literally across the road from Royal Melbourne. They've got this incredible golf facility that they've built. And it's like they do a lot of the training and the coaching for the talented young players around or whatever. But they've a really good kind of top tracer facility there. And like 7 days a week, any night, any evening that I've gone there, it is wedged and it's huge. I mean,
double decker kind of thing, a few stories.
That one's not a double decker, but there's another one near me, Albert Park, around where the Formula One was just over the weekend, and that's a double decker, and it is wedged. Like, it is so hard. The one at Albert Park is so wedged that they don't let you play the courses. I think you and I were chatting about that. Because so many people are playing golf at driving ranges, like that. Yeah, probably aren't members of golf clubs.
Yeah, it's a big thing in Korea and Japan at the moment, because they actually don't have the real estate to build more golf clubs, but there's such a demand for it on the back of, I don't know, whether you go back to KH Lee and or KJ Choi on the Korea side and Matsuyama on the Japanese side, but there's a massive demand for it and they literally cannot build more golf clubs.
Man, that is so funny. It's the only alternative. There's when I go there, it is like there's so many Asian people, because there's a lot of Asian people that live in Melbourne, and there is so many Asian people at these driving ranges.
Yeah, I think it's the second biggest market behind the US. Like, you might have thought, Europe surely is second to that, but no, it's actually, and it's only a small region. It's kind of the area around. I think if you actually just included Korea and Japan, that's probably what you mean when you're talking about the Asian market. Maybe some Chinese as well, but like, it's absolutely enormous. But like, when you hear stats like that, and there's also other elements to it, where if you look at the average age on these non-grass golf statistics, like, they're all younger players. I think in terms of the gender breakdown, there's 20% of the people playing grass golf are women, 40% of the people playing grass golf are women and non-grass golf. So like, all the statistics point to, this is a younger, more diverse, like, far easier way to get into golf. So it is, and to be fair, like, it's not golf will always be there in terms of the 4-hour like course experience, but like, in terms of actually someone trying to get into golf, if the initiation into golf is go out there and play for 4 hours and like top the ball along the place and be embarrassed, like, that's a fairly big barrier to entry. Whereas if it's just go to the driving range, play a few mini games, have a few drinks, it's far more accessible and far less intimidating. So it's only going to get bigger. And like, if you even think of European market, like, there is no Top Golf to do, and that's just Top Golf, by the way, that's not including Drive Shack or any of the other big driving ranges in the US. Like, there's 30 million users solely in one company.
Yeah,
they are, but like, still there's definitely way more. Like, I'd say the actual percentage of non-grass to grass in the US is probably closer to 60%, maybe even 65%. But if you look at Europe, then, like, take Ireland as an example. Like, you can go to Leopard Sound, you can play the Trackman range there, you can go to the K Club for the K Golf World, which is the kind of an indoor golf club, and then you can kind of look on the Trackman side and you can find, I don't know, a couple of dozen. Like, even Clongowes, the secondary school, is on Trackman's side because they have a Trackman. Like, that's how sparse it is across Ireland. So the breakdown in Ireland is probably closer to less than 5%, could even be like as low as 2% of non-grass golfers versus grass golfers. So like, it's going to be huge here in the next few years. There's going to be fucking Trackmans everywhere. But that, and even considering how good Ireland is and how kind of accessible golf is in Ireland, it's only going to get better. So yeah, it's a cool, it was just cool listening to him talk about it, because he'd been there at Topgolf when it wasn't the Bahamut that we know today, and it wasn't on John Ram's bag or anything like that. It was just a driving range with this tech. And now it's like, right, go to a driving range, and if it doesn't have, well, there's the basic necessities. It's like, does it have decent balls, decent mats, decent shelter? But now driving ranges and the kind of non-traditional experience in golf, the bar has been set so high by the likes of Topgolf that it's driving everyone else forward. So it's a net positive for everyone.
100%, man. And even like, so for me, when I go to the driving range, the one in Sandringham that I mentioned, the one that's kind of a little bit further away from me, it's 15-20 minute drive, you can play the courses, you can go play St. Andrews and stuff, and it's a complete game changer from like an experience perspective, versus the one that just has the Trackman, tells you how far the ball's gone. But I'm kind of looking at that saying, that's a bit shit, it's not as good as the one where you can go play the courses. But like, it's obviously so cool that you can even do that. But like the ante has been upped. And
yeah, definitely
matters.
Like even taking like the main reason we decided to start swing in Drogheda is because we couldn't find somewhere in Dublin. You need good ceiling height, you need kind of open plan. It's hard to actually find the right venue for it. But we just said, right, there's a driving range in Pilltown just outside the town. There's a driving range in Morgan's just outside Termonfeckin. And they're not like they're exactly what you think of when you think of old school driving range. It's like it's grand. And then Bettystown doesn't really have a driving range. Baltray, to be fair, have a Trackman and a beautiful driving range, but you're not going to rock up to Baltray and practice. You have to be a member. And Seapoint then have a good range as well, but again, very basic. To get an indoor facility, you have to go up to Balcarrick, down to Balcarrick and up to Newry. So wow. Drogheda is like 150,000 people in the greater area. There's three amazing golf courses and there's two shit ranges. So we're like, right, this is the perfect place to do it. But it's the same for most big towns in Ireland. Like the driving range, unless you're in Leopardstown or at the airport, like outside of Dublin, it's just completely, I know, just in terms of the tech, as in good driving ranges. They're like the ones is Ballinidi down in Limerick is unbelievable. Like that's I don't know if you remember Gavin Young from Newport. Do you remember him?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, so he's the one the pros down in Ballinidi. And like they have an unbelievable range, but go down to Cork then you're fairly stock as well. But like what I mean is the bar has been set so high by the States now and people are coming to expect the level of ranges that you're talking about as well as in the old this is how far you hit it just doesn't cut it anymore. You want to be able to play St. Andrews when you're visiting these kind of ranges, yeah, just for a bit of crack. And Ireland in particular, London is the same, well, London's not, but the UK is the same. Like it's going to become, in the next 5 years, it's going to be an absolute necessity, yeah, that you have good tech, because there's going to be such high competition because so many are going to pop up. And like as far as people's actual golf game goes, gonna go through the roof, but participation is the main thing. So like you're looking at a massive influx of golfers just on the back of the facilities are now available. I don't have to go down to this driving range and top balls. I can go down to the Leopardstown driving range and play a mini game with my kids. That's far more enjoyable than
the family experience. And tell me this though. So from one of the big things that's emerged from your what you heard at this conference was this non-grass golf, driving ranges, all that sort of stuff. What other stuff did you come across with, say, your man Andrew McCauley, the Tomorrow Sports, which is obviously the Rory and Tiger back thing, and even Trackman. Anything else juicy come out of it?
Yeah, asked him straight up which TGL team Larry was joining. Said he couldn't.
Oh tell yeah.
We'll presume we'll find that out in the coming.
He wouldn't tell you, sorry, is it?
Oh no, straight up asked him. Yeah, he said I just can't tell you. He said he knows where he's going, so it's done. But he just can't tell anyone. But yeah, like he went through Tomorrow Sports, kind of why, particularly on that side, why the timing is good. Explain the format. It does seem a bit like convoluted, but like again, it's a brand new thing in a purpose-built venue with a 64-foot high screen, I think, and a green that changes based on the hole they're playing. And they don't actually play existing holes. They've actually made 15 holes specific for it. So like when they move on to a new hole, the green just morphs into a different green. So it does, the tech behind it sounds extremely cool. And the format, I guess, it's only going to be a 2-hour slot. Like Dan Zelazinski actually said it earlier on in the day. He's like, it's going to be a massive success. Now, I think he is actually working with them a bit on it, on the data side in the background. But his point is, like all of the numbers, all the kind of factors of what's gone into it, be it the kind of movement towards alternative forms of golf, but also they have the ESPN primetime slot from January on. They have some of the most recognizable sports stars in the world backing it and owning teams. They have some of the biggest and most well-known businessmen in sport backing the teams, owning the teams. Like, from a data perspective, he said it's going to be an absolute hit. So it'll be interesting to see what the actual numbers come back and the feedback from users when we do see it in January 2025. But
it's so hard to picture. Like, I mean, I can obviously kind of picture like the likes of Tiger and Rory and stuff in a big simulator and Mike.
Yeah, like it's only gonna fit 1,600 people. So it's not.
Okay, I didn't even realize there was a crowd there. So there's actually gonna be fans.
It's gonna be waste management kind of vibes to it in terms of.
Cool. That actually would be probably a bit of crack win, almost like Ali Pali at the darts, maybe not quite as many points.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, literally just rowdy. And there is a shot clock on it as well, and all the players are mic'd up, so like they have to talk to each other. If one of them hits the drive, then they only have a certain amount of time to finish the hole. So they have to, like, I don't know, Ricky is teeing off and JT shouts back, "Give me a uphill putt." From the back left of the green, or like they have to actually talk like a team, which I guess is again very new to golf. But yeah, I know it's so left field that it's nearly impossible to actually think about what it's going to be like until we see it, and hopefully it is a good watch, because it's not I know they're building franchises around it and everything, but like this is just, I guess, the Monday night before a PGA Tour event.
It'd be interesting to see.
They're not building it up as world champions or anything. It's a cool kind of event that's gonna potentially morph into something else. He didn't really give it away. I actually asked as well. I was like, right, so if you're building a purpose-built venue for golf, what other sports are you concentrating on? And he said, yeah, we'll focus on the golf first, but we have other plans. So I'd say in terms of, I don't know, football might be a bad example, but like any other kind of sports, potentially even individual sports that have a big following, they're probably going to focus their attentions on that and build more purpose-built venues for specific sports to complement the main tours or main leagues. So yeah, it'll be very interesting. But like, again, the fucking investors they have are outrageous. The money is no object. The kind of entertainment side, like, but if you exclude the tours and like the main or the biggest elements of each sport traditionally, it's just going to complement them. It's not trying to take away a Saturday on the PGA Tour. It's Monday.
Yeah,
night.
Yeah.
Players go away. So it's a totally different approach.
Yeah, yeah. Because the numbers on viewing figures on the PGA Tour are just dwindling. I said it at the start. Like, we're obviously in a bit of a lull of the season at the moment, but this standard of watching the golf at the moment on tour just isn't good. My sister voice noted me there the other day, and she was saying she was watching Full Swing, and she's not like, she's played, she took tried a bit of golf when she was younger. She's never into it. She hit the ball, but never really into it. But anyway, the whole Full Swing thing seems to be attracting this whole new peripheral viewer into golf. People who just weren't into golf, the likes of my sister, for example, and I'm sure there's plenty of people that have similar experiences, or my missus, she watched the Full Swing with me, and suddenly she's like, oh, I didn't know there was this feud between Brooks and Rory, and like, oh, who's this Joel Damon guy? I really like him, and all this sort of stuff. And like, that's really cool. But when my sister was voiced on me, she was like, oh, I'm going to watch the Masters. I might watch some of the PGA Tour and stuff. And I was like, oh, that's really cool. And then I started kind of thinking to myself, actually, golf viewing is kind of shit at the moment. And it's like, she's going now to start watching stuff. Like, so the Full Swing thing is working. It's really cool. It'll attract this new audience to golf. But and there's so much talk about the product and all that stuff at the moment. But it's
like that fucking word.
Yeah. Watching Peter Malnati win at the weekend. Cool, delighted for him. Really, really likable guy. His emotion that poured out of him in his interview afterwards, really cool. He hit great shots down the stretch. And I don't know if you heard his interview where he was talking about like he wants the shit talk to be gone about live and contracts and stuff. And
says, which I fucking love, by the way, as in fuck the money. I never cared about what Michael Jordan earned, but I know what he won. Like, that's exactly.
Can you, can you hit the shot under pressure? When you're a kid growing up, you're not worried about Michael Jordan's salary. You want to be given the chance to hit the shot under pressure, and it's so true. But anyway, the point that I was making, it's this full swing and everything is drawing all this new attention to golf, and the product, for lack of a better word, of PGA Tour events is just a little bit shit at the moment.
Yeah, like if you take the players out of it, which was, to be fair, fucking amazing.
Yeah, true.
The rest of it has been fairly lackluster. And that's like, that's not, I personally love the stories. Like Milnati is a great example of like he's on the PGA Tour players board. Like he's a fairly influential guy, but like you would think he's there to represent the guys outside the top 100, top 200. Like, that's essentially why he's there. Maybe there's more reasons to it, but like he's one of those guys that is the voice for the lads who aren't in the signature events potentially. Then he goes and wins, gets up to 65th in the world. But like, unless you were watching and knew who he was, it's not. Yeah, I know what you mean. I do love the stories, but like, I totally understand from this fucking product side why it's not as compelling as a leaderboard with Scheffler, Schauffler, McIlroy, fucking everyone. Yeah. And that was why I was a bit surprised with, I know Netflix do it all the time, but like when they just drop an entire season in one night, and especially dropping it, like, what was it, early March, 7th of March, something like that. It's like, surely you space these 8 episodes, or 10, 8 or 10, I can't remember, these episodes out so that the final episode is the week before the Ryder Cup or before the Masters. I just assume that's what they're going to do, because it made more sense, because then you had people watching it right up until the big one. Because the Masters, to be fair, like, the fucking dog watches the Masters. Like, every single person who even doesn't give a shit about golf is tuning into the Masters. And if they had to bring it or end the season right before that, I just think it would have had a massive impact. And sorry, hopefully it still does have a massive impact on people who are going to go and watch the Masters. But you're right, in terms of just, they're dropping it, they dropped the entire season around a time, bar the players, where I'd say the average odds of a winner has been 150-1. So it's, the storylines just aren't there. And maybe that's, in terms of thinking about the perfect tour schedule. Like, is it just the signature events that happen once every 3 weeks, and then there's two kind of filler events where the big lads aren't? Like, is that then, it's like, instead of having 3 weeks of class golf in a row, it's like, right, let's space them out, and whatever way they want to do signature events. Because it feels like that's the way it's going with the 70 no cut shite. But if that's what you're going to do, then you have to space them out evenly, or else people just go a month without proper golf or without seeing Scotty Scheffler. So yeah, I don't know. What's the perfect tour is an interesting conversation. And
well, Ricky Fowler made a very good point there a couple of weeks ago. I heard him interviewed, and he was just saying that, like, there isn't really a proper full-on break in the golfing season like there is in football or like US sports. I know, like, for baseball, for example, in the US, it's very intense over the summer months, and then there's just big drop-offs. And, like, you know, when there's a bit of a break in football season, like, I'm mad into you know, football, Man United and whatever else, but like, when you've got 2-3 months there where they're all off, and, you know, first few weeks it's fine, whatever, but then, you know, all the transfer news starts emerging, and then you're like, oh, I wonder who's going to be in the squad. Like, there's a much bigger build up, and by the time the first game rocks around in kind of late August, you're raring to go for it, and you just don't have that with golf. It's just a really scattered season where 50 weeks of the year you've basically got an event, and there's no, like, the, it's just all the same. You kind of just look up on a Thursday, like, oh yeah, what event is on this week? That's what it feels like at the moment, you
yeah
know?
Now, at the same time, that has to be there in some capacity, because if you're just coming off the Corn Ferry Tour and you're barely making any cuts in the PGA Tour, like, you have to have a way to make your card. So even if it was that, say, from around November, and so, like, there's a DP World Tour swing in there as well, so the big guys might show up around January in Dubai for some of the Omega events, the Rolex events. But if there was a few weeks there where Ricky Fowler, as an example, could take his fucking Christmas off, and he's not playing golf till, I don't know, till Genesis or to Riviera, and something like that is his off season. But at the same time, the fucking Barbasol and all those other competitions are happening where the lads are actually trying to break into that top 70. There has to be some sort of a...
Well, could they not be running adjacently? Like, take the football season, like the English football pyramid, where you've got Premier Leagues at the top. Like, there's matches going on in the Championship, same at the weekend, or League One, League Two, all the way up. And then if you qualify and get out of that, then you emerge...
Yeah, No, I think there's definitely, as Chanda, Sean, one of my mates, about this, and like he's adamant that, like, and I'm gradually coming around to him. It's just the fucking purest golfer in me is just like, no, don't change it. But like, if there is, because you already have, take the DP World Tour as a good example. So you start off in the Euro Pro, the Alps, like one of the kind of lower down tours where it's professional golf, but like, if you have to win that event, or else you're not paying for the fucking accommodation. Like, it's a grind,
which is like National League football or League Two football equivalent, though. Yeah,
and then you graduate up to the Challenge Tour, and suddenly you're in the Championship. Like, maybe it's not even it is for DP World Tour. Like, but it's, you're one good season away, or three wins. You're two or three good weeks of golf away from playing in the Premiership in Europe.
Mm.
So like that kind of graduation system where there's three tiers is close to it, I guess. In the PGA Tour, it's not really. It's like there's PGA Tour U. So if you're a shit hot out of university, there's some sort of route to the PGA Tour directly. If you're not, then here's the Korn Ferry Tour. Well, sorry, there's also the PGA Tour Canada as well, but like there is still graduation steps. But then it seems like when you break into the PGA Tour, like it just feels like there needs to be another layer there, where like, obviously you have the Tigalas and stuff who come out of the Korn Ferry Tour, and they're just fucking, or Aber coming out of college, they're just fucking ready for professional golf. Mm-hmm. But there's 99% of the lads who follow that same route aren't. And if there was, say, the kind of 150 odd person fields on a week-to-week base in the PGA Tour, it feels like the way that they've brought the signature events to 70 is that they're nearly priming us for that's Champions League, that's Premiership. Championship is going to be the guys who are hovering around inside the top 100 out to about 200. And then 200 below is Korn Ferry. So it seems like there's a very natural progression there that doesn't exist at the moment. But like, if there was a Korn Ferry Tour to graduate onto a PGA Tour Championship, the Championship equivalent of the PGA Tour. And then if you win two or three events on that, you get into the PGA Tour, which is the top 100, or onto the main tour, or whatever the fuck it's called, the Premiership of the PGA. And then suddenly on a week-to-week basis, or even if that season is very condensed, which again, as Ricky is alluding to, like you have, instead of 50 weeks of golf, you might have 30. And there's four majors chucked in there, and there's good collaboration between the DP World Tour and PGA Tour, so that it actually works out very well on a schedule side. And yeah, if you do well in the Championship, then equivalent on the PGA Tour, the same as the Korn Ferry Tour, like win three, and the Challenge Tour, like win three times, automatic card, finishing the order of merit, automatic card. So it sounds like there's going to be another level to pro golf in the not too distant future.
Well, yeah, I just think there's got to be a condensed schedule, as you said, 30 weeks a year, a clear tiering structure and hierarchy like there is in other sports, and like get the eyeballs on in one spot. It just, obviously the whole live debacle has gone on now for a while, and I'm sick of talking about it. But it really, for me now, it's just, we're seeing a play out in front of our eyes, how fragmented everything is. I just don't know where to look. Like every week, I'm like, where is the main action that I should be looking at? You know, is it in Europe? Very rarely is it in Europe, like 3 or 4 times a year with Wentworth and Dubai and whatever, it's in Europe. And then you've got like PGA Tour last week. It's just, and look, maybe I'm just random.
No. I think you're not the only one. Like it is, I just love that there is that. I love the underdog stories of the fucking 200-to-1 shot, like crying on a green, hasn't won in fucking 9 years. Like Malady was a great example of that. But at the same time, how does the PGA Tour maximize the fucking product? We need to find a new word for that.
Sorry to cut across, but like the Malnati thing, I agree, it's really cool to see, and like I'm happy for the guy, but like the field was shite, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, but, and to that point, your sister's like, who the fuck is this lad?
Okay, he beat Xander Schauffele, who did really well and is playing really well at the moment, and like beat Cameron Young, and all that sort of stuff. But like, you know, we're not talking Brooks, Rory, DJ, Cam Smith, Ram. Like, they're not there, you know? And of course, not going to be there every week, but like, it's this every week at the PGA Tour is a fairy tale story at the moment. And it's kind of just bullshit because it's not real fairy tales. It's not like, I don't know, to go back to the football example, some underdog getting all the way to the FA Cup final and actually winning something that's where all the top dogs are playing.
The FA Cup is a great example because that's the majors essentially. It's like if Malnati wins the fucking Valspar, like Valspar is historically a cool event, but if Seamus Power wins the Barbasol, that's not FA Cup. That's just like you won the Barbasol, no one was there. Whereas at least in the majors, if you manage to get into them and then have a 200-to-1 shot win, that's magic. That's the FA Cup.
Like Dave's favorite mate, Michael Block, doing what he did in the PGA, which was genuinely cool because it was in the PGA where it's an actual major.
That's exactly, yeah, 100%. That's amazing. He's back. He's back this year, baby. Block party.
Block, is he? What, he's playing the PGA this year, is he? Or is he playing the Masters? No, he wouldn't be.
I think he held a putt to get into the PGA again. Automatically.
Oh yeah, top 15, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And be milking his moment for all his worth. Fair play to him, he said, right? Right. So what are we saying then this week for PGA Tour? I mean, we're in.
Well, actually, Texas. Just before you go on to that, did you watch Malnati? Did you watch any Sunday?
Yeah, I did. Of course, yeah.
That drop on 16 has caused a lot of controversy.
Yeah, give us your take on it.
So we
maybe I'll explain it just for anyone who hasn't seen it. He hit a 17 hole, I think it was. It's really 16, tight.
16.
Yeah, very, very tight finish between two or three of the lads who were up there. Malnati hits, shot through the back of the green on 16, goes into deep rough. And what was he standing on a sprinkler and therefore was able to take a drop away from that out of his terrible lie in the rough onto the fringe where he gets putter on it. To put down, make your par, move on.
Yeah, like it's we actually shared, the USGA put up a video explaining that rule a few weeks ago, and we shared it on the Instagram because it is a bit of a mad one. I actually asked the followers on Instagram, it's like, what's the ruling here, before showing the video, and everyone was like, no, you have to drop it in the rough. And it's like, no, you actually don't. Like it just was a really extreme example because it was in the heat of the moment on Sunday on a PGA Tour. And this guy is after overshooting the green, and it was funny watching the ball bounce in. As I was rooting for him, but like it's like, it's just going to be off the fringe. Suddenly it fucking dives into the worst lie I think he's ever seen.
Yeah.
But yeah, if your stance is in the sprinkler heads, or it's obscured by something, I guess that isn't part of the golf course, then you get relief, and it's a club length relief from that area as long as it's no closer to the hole. That's the only thing about it. So like if the sprinkler heads were another 3 feet in, he would have to drop in the rough, but the fact that his club extended onto the edge of the green, no closer to the hole, he was able to get relief. Like it's the same as if you're in the rough off the fairway and there's a sprinkler head or something there, like you can drop from the rough onto the fairway as long as it's the right distance and it's not moving the ball closer to the hole. So it just, as far as I see people fucking giving out, and it's like, lads, that's the rule. Like, as in, I know it's a bit weird and it looks like, oh, fucking fix, but like, it's not. It's a natural rule, and I think it was just because it was Sunday at a fucking in the clutch. That's the only reason it got so much attention. But like, I'd say lads are doing that all the time. It's just you don't see it happening because it doesn't happen in such extreme scenarios. But yeah, it was
I wouldn't have known that rule inside out, to be honest. And if it had happened, me playing with some lads at the weekend and like Sunday comp, and one of the lads
in an inter-club competition.
Yeah, I'd be like, I don't think you can do that, mate. I think you got to drop, like, you can't improve your lie. But yeah, that's
there's another one as well. Just you should follow everyone should follow the USGA Instagram, because it's
very good.
Brings out these, they're really good at it because they pick the most fucking obscure rules in golf and explain them. Another one is if you top the ball off the tee on a tee box and say it goes backwards, like you just miss it. As long as it stays within the teeing area, so like two clubs back from the tee markers and inside that kind of imaginary square, you can re-tee the ball with no penalty. Like it's one of the only times you can do it. But the USGA are bringing out all these videos about stupid, like mad rules like that. But yeah, this just happened to be.
So hold on, just on that one, on re-teeing the ball, like your first shot still counts. You're hitting your second shot off the tee there.
Yeah, but you can pick it up and re-tee it.
Okay.
As long as it's in the teeing area. If it moves forward a foot, you can't. But if you miss the ball and it goes a foot in front of you and slightly to the right, if you're right-handed, you can re-tee it. So, yeah, mad stuff. But, like, yeah, there's stupid rules in golf. And sure, before COVID, hitting or holding the putt with the pin in from the green was a two-shot penalty. Like, they are always changing depending on the times and how stupid they are. But, yeah, I don't think that one will be reversed either, like as in the Malnati situation. It's fairly standard practice, but I think it's just because everyone was watching and he ended up winning a couple of million quid, probably because of it. Like, he wasn't getting up and down from that lie.
Mm.
So, and I know he won by two in the end, but like, it would have been a different story altogether. But
yeah, it changes the whole.
It's funny, like, as in, I fucking feel so bad for Cam Young. Like, that prick, he cannot catch a break.
Like, yeah, I don't like him though, because remember he when he was in Dubai at the start of this year, himself and Rory going head to head, and he took a lump out of the green in anger on one of the holes. And for me, that you can't be doing that.
Unforgivable.
Mark in my black book.
Like, that's his seventh runner-up finish without a win. I think it goes back as far as the 90s or 80s or even further. Like, he's the only person to have done it since, in the last 30, 40 years. So he's definitely due a win, but like, after such a shit-hot rookie season and now he's still hitting the post, I'd say he's one of the most frustrated men in the top tier of golf at the moment.
Yeah, and it doesn't really seem like he's bottled it. Like, considering how much bottle he did show in the Open when Cam Smith won, he literally needed an eagle on the last to have a chance of a playoff. He nails it on the green and holds the putt for a two and jumps for Rory, comes second, loses to Cam Smith by a shot, which was bad. So Malnati, fair play to him. Kind of a weird looking golf swing and
the yellow fucking golf ball.
Yellow golf ball, like,
so weird. I know Bubba used to do it, but I think it's so strange looking at it.
It is. I like lads who do their own thing though.
In fact, yellow golf ball and the bucket hat as well.
Yeah, bucket hat. Fair play to him. A nice guy, very bit of a deep thinker by the looks of it. Pretty articulate. I very much enjoyed hearing his interview. That wasn't like the usual God bless God and all that sort of shit.
I'd say that's part of the reason that he is on that players directory board, is that like the interview we were talking about earlier, the Michael Jordan and the Tiger comparisons. He's talking like an actual person who loves golf. It's like, that's why when you're practicing, when you're 14 on the putting green on your own, you're in your head, it's like, oh, to win the Masters. Like, it's not to win $4 million. It's that kind of, yeah, I just think he's a really normal dude. And yeah, I think it was 2015, was it? He won the Shriners or something like that. But he's a proper vet on the PGA Tour. And yeah, he does seem like an absolute legend. So he booked his ticket to Augusta. So
yeah, be happy man. For him. Happy for him, but still a shit field. And I want more entertainment on Sunday night or Monday morning.
Same again this week.
Yeah, it is. Except Scheffler will be there. Speaking of which, what's your take? Is there anyone apart from Scotty Scheffler who can win this week?
Yeah, like it's this Texas swing. Of course, actually called Memorial, but like it's nothing to do with the Memorial. It's only been here for a few years, so it's very hard to kind of size up the course. But the funny thing is, as far as trends go, green regulation seems to be the main criteria, and Scotty Scheffler is literally Tiger Woods-esque at the moment in terms of hitting greens. So like you look at 11-4 and you're like, Jesus, that's very low, but it's actually probably good value. I think he's going to walk it. I put in a request about for Scotty to win the Houston and the Masters. I think he's 3-1 and 5-1 respectively for it. Didn't get offered a market yet. But you presume if that was say 10-12-1, I'd probably have a good bet on it. Because yeah, I just think he wins this two in handstands. And then Augusta is, I think it's gonna be the Scotty show again. But like he's learned how to fucking putt. It's game over for everyone else if he keeps the tee to green stuff up and is actually able to putt inside 5 feet. And it's not even able to putt inside 5 feet. Like he's shown us now that he's able to putt fucking anything from inside 15 feet, which is terrifying. So yeah, I think I'm going to have a bet on Scotty. All right. But Tigala might have a sniff. I think he could be a good shout at around 20-1. But again, it's Scotty's to lose in my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing that's going against Scotty is like it's just hard to keep winning. Like he won Bay Hill and he wins the Players.
It's three in a row in terms of appearances. Like fucking mad.
It would be
Bay Hill and the Players. Like to your point, proper fields, and this is championship golf. Like as in Premier League championship equivalent. So
yeah, he's. He's playing incredible. I just don't want to see him like become as good as Tiger. But all the stats that I'm looking at, I didn't mean that. Like he's not going to become as good as Tiger. I don't want him to have a season where he dominates like Tiger had those kind of seasons where he wins like two or three majors or something like that. Because it's kind of shaping up that way. The stats are just so good. And I don't know how he bloody does it because his golf swing to me, untrained eye does not look anything impressive. I just don't know. Like when you saw Tiger swinging the club back in the day, or when you saw Rory or whatever in full swing, that you can see how good they are. But Scheffler, like his feet are all over the place. I'm like, how is this guy the best in the world? Like, yeah, what is he doing well?
I don't know who did it. I think it was that page, Tour Golf, TUOR Golf, the satire kind of page. And he's like, you need to change the Players logo. And it was just a picture of Scotty basically dancing in the follow through. This is very good. But like, if you try and replicate what he does with his feet, you will probably break your ankle. Like it doesn't make any sense at all. But at impact, it's nearly perfect. Like even his backswing, yeah, he can go way over the top sometimes. Like he's not perfect by any means. Whereas when you look at, well, Rory does have his faults as well, but like prime Tiger, just perfect position, perfect impact, perfect balance. Like it's the complete opposite to Tiger, but he's somehow getting the same results in terms of actual strokes gained from tee to green. So, yeah, I think someone said that to him. It's like, you're compared to Tiger. And he's like, yeah. And then he heard someone on the course, I think it was the Players. And someone goes, oh, Scotty, you're the next Tiger Woods. only 400 weeks to go or something like that in terms of being on in world number one. So it just shows that Tiger is, you can compare him to Tiger all you want. He just has to keep it up for another 6 years and then he can be compared to Tiger.
He's only got one major. I mean, we obviously can't get it, put him in that bracket.
But he's mad as well, actually, thinking Brooks has five and Scotty Scheffler has one.
Yeah. I'd love to see him up close because on TV, I don't see how he's so good, but I'd love to see him up close and just like hear the strike and watch the ball flight and all that and maybe get a better sense of how good he actually is. I've never seen him up close, but you're going to go to the Masters and practice around and stuff like that, so you'll get a...
Yeah, I'll be there. I'm going to be there for more than the practice round now. I have tickets for a Thursday as well.
Oh, you have tickets for Thursday?
Yeah. Potentially Friday as well, but definitely Thursday. So we'll be there for a tournament round. But like,
how did you go about tickets for the Masters?
The ballot. The ballot got me the Wednesday tickets and then buying ones for the Thursday. Not paying $2,000 a ticket, but like just the face value from people through 1-0, which is dead on. But I think on the Wednesday, it's still no phones, like zero tolerance. But on the Wednesday, you can bring a camera, like a proper camera. So I'll try and get a bit of content on the Wednesday for the lads. But then Thursday is just, I can't wait to see how military it is. Because I'd say if you even fucking touch your phone out on the golf course, you're within a couple of seconds, you're probably snipered. So...
Taking them by the knees. That'd be pretty cool. So to round off, so you're going to Scheffler anyway this week.
While you're thinking there, the India, the Hero India.
Oh yeah.
Have you seen the course?
Mad course.
Dan Rappaport giving out about it saying it looks weird. I was like, it's fucking unreal. Like the bunkers, yeah. I know they're layered uniquely, but the lads were saying, like, as in the lads, the players playing, were saying it's incredibly difficult. Like an 18 handicap is shooting 150 kind of thing. I think Rasmus Højgaard has a very good opportunity there as well. Could be one for Joe's best mate, Mr. Ferguson. He's playing well. He definitely, like, as in terms of bogey avoidance, that'd be the main thing, especially around a very difficult course. But I'm definitely going to tune into some of that just to see the course and see how it's playing, because it looks like an absolute monster of a place.
It does look very good. Slouton's off to a fast start, and speaking of Ewan Ferguson, the 87th, 400 par. Because they're India, they're obviously bit ahead of you, and so I was gonna say,
behind you,
they're between you and me. I like Wyndham Clark, I think he's playing very well at the moment. His odds are, I think he's probably second favorite behind Scotty, so it's not, we're literally picking the favorite and second favorite here. I don't know if we're doing anyone any favors, but
yeah, I did. I kind of went through it, yesterday evening. And it's like who's the 150, 100-1 guy that can actually get it done this week? I think Sam Ryder, I'm going to put an each way bet on him as well. He's 110-1.
Okay.
He's actually playing quite well, and just he's an absolute animal. I don't think he should be over 100-1. And Malnati to do the back to back is 125-1, but I think he's had his day in the sun. So. Yeah, it's Scotty to win, and then Sam Ryder each way at 110s.
Yeah, the only one that I'd have as a little outsider would be Torbjørn Olsen. I think he's going to win.
You've backed him at least fucking 50 times this year.
Yeah, already.
I know, I do like him. I really like him. It's just,
He won in earlier on in the year in Europe. He's had his hiatus. I back him all the way. But I'm going Wyndham Clark, you're going Scotty Scheffler, and we're taking no risks, really. Right, cool.
Fuck Scotty, I'm backing him myself, but Sam Ryder each way is my pick.
Sam Ryder. Okay, yeah, you're brave. I like it.
11-4 okay. isn't much insight.
So your master's is 2 weeks, yeah? So you'll be here next week, and then you'll be flying out a couple of days after that, yeah?
Yeah, so I'll hopefully, if we can do the pod on Wednesday week, I'll jump into Hooters and use the Wi-Fi and do a pod live from Augusta.
Hooters. Yeah. Love it.
Just after coming off the par three, so it could be. It'll be a bit later. Yeah, no, I'll try and, yeah, if we can do it Wednesday night, I'll definitely jump on. Like, it'll be cool to.
That will be cool.
John Daly in the background, drag him over.
You can be with the riffraff that is around Augusta. Looking forward to hearing all about that and seeing some behind the scenes action. Right, fair play. We'll leave it there. Thank you, everyone, for listening to our rambles for another week. We will chat to you next week.